Hey, America.
Start listening now.
Hey, you guys. Guess what?
What?
What's up?
This is episode number 300. And it's like the universe has conspired to celebrate with us with the massive news that Canada is joining Eurovision.
Canada? This is blasphemy. This is madness.
Madness. This is 12 points.
And welcome to another excessively violent episode of 12 Points from America, the Eurovision podcast directed by Zack Snyder. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Liz.
All right. Can I just say, 300 shows with you people. Not as many with Liz, but that's fine.
She was here for moral support for a lot of it. Well,
a number of them, yes.
When we started this show, we hadn't met.
That's true.
And now we're wed to each other. Gross.
Ew. Yeah.
Ew. Mm-hmm. You're disgusting. Cute. You know that?
Yeah.
Yeah, but think about how much has changed for the group of us, plus Danny. Since we started the show in what, 2019? Just before the Tel Aviv show, right?
Yeah, 2019.
Yeah, so since then, everybody who has participated on the show as a main member of the cast has gotten married.
That's true.
Pets have been adopted.
Yeah.
Homes have been purchased. Or sold.
Or both.
Yeah.
Or both.
I did one of each.
Yeah. I moved into a house that somebody else purchased, but yeah, I mean, life goes on, and we've been there with each other, and I'm so grateful for that. And you know, especially over COVID, when we weren't really allowed to be in each other's personal spaces, like, you guys have been my sort of a social rock for every other week or every week over the course of these past couple of years, and I am incredibly grateful for all of you, plus Danny in absentia. And honestly, I'm so grateful for all the listeners who have joined us, whether they've been here since episode 1 or 100, or they literally are just tuning in now. I am so, so grateful for all of you around the world who are joining this crazy train. Like, thanks for hanging out with us.
And if you were here from episode 1, why are you still here?
We still haven't revealed who the killer is.
Oh.
So,
it was probably Danny.
Yeah,
he's since absconded. Danny will be around for something. He will not be here today. He could not make it, but
he senses love, I'm sure.
Yeah. So speaking of like all of our listeners and stuff like that, at our current pace, it appears that this episode will put us over the 6-figure listeners on Spotify.
What?
Over the course of the history, that's not 100,000 unique people, probably, but like individual streams of the show, and that's just
listens.
Yeah, but like we've done. I feel like we've done pretty well for ourselves as a podcast that is weird and silly, and
we're just grateful. Honestly, we're not professional podcasters, as you could probably tell by sometimes the quality of our editing. Even though kudos to Eric and Derek for having honestly taken that on. We're not recording from a professional studio. We are recording this from home. It's being done as a labor of love, and we know that people have a choice in where they point their ears, and we're so grateful that people have pointed their ears towards us. And if you want to reach out to us, you could do so on social media. We're basically on just about everything at 12pointsUSA, or you could just email us directly at 12pointsofamerica@gmail.com, find our merchandise on Redbubble. You can support us financially with a one-off donation on our Ko-fi account, that's Ko-fi, or a sustained monthly donation on our Patreon. Whether you support us financially or not, we love and appreciate and see you anyway, but Patreon supporters do get exclusive content and early access to episodes, and shout-outs if they've just joined us, like our newest patron, Euronut.
Hey,
what's up?
I don't know if that's your name or just short. A delicious candy bar.
Yeah.
It could be both.
Who knows?
I imagine it's hazelnut. I feel like hazelnut is more of a thing over there than it is here.
Or pistachio or
almond.
Yeah, it's that Dubai Euro nut.
Crispy.
Yeah. All right. despite Liz's objections, Canada is in the contest now, which is crazy.
Major and crazy.
And here's my number. Call me maybe.
I think that she's, I think Carly Rae's probably number one on many, many, many of our lists of, hey, you want to do this thing?
Where's Alanis these days?
Didn't she sing the national anthem at one of the World Cup games? Or
did she? Oh, I missed that, if so.
Hey, speaking of the World Cup, you know what country I've always hated?
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Belgium.
For the record, we are recording this about 1 hour. An hour or 2 hours? 2 hours. 1 hour.
No.
1 hour.
1 hour. Sorry. Hour. Time zones. What are they anyway? Before kickoff for the World Cup, the U.S. facing Belgium. So we don't know what's happening.
Our mortal enemy.
We don't actually know if we hate Belgium yet, but we'll tell you in like 3 hours.
Well.
TBD.
But then again, I think Belgium kind of hates us too after the whole.
Oh, after the FIFA World Peace
the Balogun
Prize
business.
Winner,
yeah.
Brought peace to the World Cup. Yeah. Thanks, buddy. Everyone loves that decision. I mean, I'm excited. I was initially excited to have him back, and now I honestly.
And then we found out why, and
I just feel dirty now.
Yeah.
Like
the whole thing. I mean, and this goes back to Sepp Blatter. It goes back to before that. Like, just the things FIFA does make no sense. And I am curious if this ends up being an actual difference maker, as if anything makes a difference in anything anymore. Anyway, Canada is back at Eurovision. Their prime minister, Mark Carney, has insinuated they will do a national final.
I would watch the hell out of that.
Mm-hmm. I'd consider traveling for that.
Same, depending on where and when, I would totally do it.
Yeah. I think I guess we don't know what the plan is. You know, are they going to go for a big act, or are they going to find an unknown for the first time out or whatever?
I mean, if it were me, if I were the head of delegation of a debuting country, I would get the biggest name possible, make the biggest splash, and just make sure that nobody would be able to deny the prowess of the Canadians. And I say just do it. Just freaking do it.
But like, not Drake.
Not Drake, please.
No. And not Bieber. We don't want Bieber there.
No.
I will say that at the risk of bursting some bubbles, including possibly my own, I will note that Carly Rae Jepsen just had a baby.
Yes, a year ago?
Sam, I'm very up to date on this. I think it was earlier this year, I want to say. She is, however, releasing a new album. It's a double album, and I believe it's being released after September 1st. So... And not that she couldn't release it before and then do another song after that, obviously, but that there's some potential there, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know what they should do is send Rush.
Well,
3 minutes.
Minutes, and two, one-third of the band is dead.
Have you seen the new drummer?
I haven't.
She's incredible. She's awesome. Okay. They should absolutely send Rush drummer lady, because who knows? They're old.
I would crap my pants if Rush ended up doing Eurovision. But yeah, 3 minutes Rush song, that's not going to happen.
Listen, Voyager's a prog band, and that's like our favorite song. So
that's true.
I don't see the issue, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I say they should go full on Canadian, like unmistakably Canadian, and send Tanya Tadok.
The hell is that?
Okay. That's the thing that won Panarctic Vision, right?
No? Not her, but that's. She blends Inuit and Inuk stylings with pop and rock. Okay. And she's a total badass. Actually, if you've ever seen the show North of North.
I have not.
Which I highly recommend you do. It is delightful. It is very...
comedy in like northern Canada.
Yeah, yeah. Up in Nunavut.
Ultra northern exposure.
Ultra northern. Like it is an Inuk focused cast and everything like that.
Neat.
But Tanya Tadok has a recurring role in it, and she's fabulous. Where she basically plays sort of a water goddess, a seal goddess. If you haven't watched North of North, do it. Like it is firmly ensconced in my pantheon of beloved Canadian shows, along with Schitt's Creek, Letterkenny, Shoresy, and yes, Heated Rivalry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Noted. Yes.
They should send that gay hockey guy. That's what they should do.
Well, only one of the two of them is Canadian.
Oh, I know. The other one's Russian.
No.
So,
I mean, but the actor's American.
Oh. Oh, I thought you meant the character. Okay.
Oh, well, I mean.
The character's Russian.
Character's Russian.
Yeah. When you Sam, when you said, like, the most Canadian thing possible, I was thinking you were going to say, like, let's send the Tragically Hip. Or.
Oh. Tragically Hip was my go-to.
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, Gord, but Gord's gone.
Oh, I know.
F cancer.
Yeah, F cancer indeed. Tom Cochran, the Life is a Highway guy, he's Canadian.
Okay.
Tate McRae's Canadian, apparently.
Yeah.
She's Canadian, but she grew up in Oman, which is a weird fact that I've learned recently. Huh. Yeah. I don't remember why. She was in their military or something.
Hey, I know somebody who's Canadian who's released some musical albums. William Shatner.
Ooh.
No, set some age records.
I just want him to read the points.
Oh, man, that'd be great.
Yeah. Awesome.
Our 12 points.
Goes to
Sweden.
Gone. Oh. Azerbaijan.
Are they just going to vote for Sweden all the time? Or who do they have an immediate alliance with, if anyone?
I mean, I think it depends
France?
On how much is Quebec watching?
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well,
I don't know. Plot is.
Wait a minute.
I think.
Can we now get Celine?
Again?
For something?
How is she doing?
I mean, she performed at the Olympics.
She's hanging in there.
In Paris.
Mm-hmm.
It's the thing about SPS, the neurological condition that she has. It's very unpredictable.
Right.
Sometimes you have good days and sometimes you have bad days. It is, you know. It's a very, very tough road.
She was in Basel, right? We learned. But
the rumor was possibly she was, and then she'd come out and said, no, I wasn't planning on it, but I don't know. Rumors were.
No, I think there's been something since that said, yes, she was there, and there was something not 100% locked in, and then she said she couldn't go. And so they pulled it for a song about how great Martin Oosterdahl is, I believe.
And yet it was still better than the Austria to Australia interval act.
Oh, my God.
From this year's contest.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, for a little bit more background on the whole Canada entering Eurovision thing, our friend James Stevenson over at ESC Insight did a really great piece on sort of the sociopolitics of the Canadian entry, how Canada ended up being considered to be a full EBU member as opposed to the associate membership that Australia's SBS has, what this could mean for the contest, and of course some waxing poetic on who we could potentially get. Again, over at ESCinsight.com. I recommend you scope it out. It was a well written piece, and I should know, I helped edit it.
Hey. Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting times.
You'd said it was a poorly written piece. I should know because I edited it. That's my quiz bowl job. Anyway, Canada, won't you?
Canada.
If you win, well, actually, we might come back to that. We're going to come back to that, I think.
Yeah.
Because this is our 300th show.
Ye gads.
You guys.
Ye gads.
Yeah.
So we decided to open up the mailbag, as we on occasion, periodically.
It's a little dusty. We haven't opened it in a hot second.
There's so much mail in here.
Because I'll say past due.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
Oh, crap.
Crap.
Let's crack some of these envelopes open. See what we got.
Got a letter opener here.
Yeah. Zip noise effect. Nice. That's what a letter opener sounds like, right?
What do we have? What do we got?
So first off, I think this wasn't a question, but we got a number of comments over the last few episodes that I think we need to address as a society, as a podcast, and those are. One, when we were talking about the moon competing at Eurovision, we completely declined to talk about Subwoofer.
Oh, God, shame on me.
Which is truly disgraceful. And we want to apologize on behalf of us to Subwoofer and the moon for the unintentional disrespect, we swear. The other comment was that it seemed like our sixth preview episode of this season wasn't showing up on Spotify, and they had to go to like our website or Apple Music or Apple Podcasts, I guess, or one of the other places where you can check us out to listen to that particular show. And the reason for that is because Spotify pulled it. And here's why. It's because of all of the nudity.
Knew it was a bad idea.
Yeah. No, it's actually because of Italy. There was some sort of a flag. I don't know that this was something that somebody went out of their way to do, or this was just an automated process or what. Obviously, we've been putting clips of songs into these things hundreds of times. We've never had an issue like that. But they said, basically, you're playing the song. We don't want you to do that. You need to explain why you're playing the song. And it's 30 seconds of the song or whatever.
Not even.
Yeah. You need to explain why the...
Why there?
Why are you like...
Perché?
Yeah. Perché loro sono the song. And I told them we're reviewing it and discussing it because that's what we do. And they said, well, they didn't say anything. The episode vanished shortly thereafter, and that's that.
It got Spotified.
Yeah. So I'm really annoyed about that. We put that episode specifically up for free, no paywall, no anything, on our Patreon. If you want to listen to that one, you'll always be able to do that there. That's just public. You can also listen to it on our website, 12pointsforamerica.com. You can go all the way back there and listen to the first ones, which I do not recommend. but you can tell the point after like 10 or so episodes when we bought better equipment, and it's like night and day. It's incredible. Anyway, the episode is available elsewhere. We're probably not going to do a prolonged battle over the episode on Spotify. And I don't know how that affects the clips going forward. We may need to be careful. I don't know.
Or you may end up with some like really fantastic, awkward, bad karaoke from us as we try to imitate a song that we think we could get tagged for.
We'll make our own clips.
All me singing the Big Sal.
Ooh. Singing the Big Sal.
My voice is messed up right now. Even more than usual. All right. So those were the two quick like ombudsman things.
I love that word.
It's a good word. It's
ombudsman,
a really good word.
Yeah.
So first question, what's your favorite word? Ooh. Eric asks.
I've always liked the word ramekin. You know, like those little dishes.
Oh, yeah.
That you can, you know, put stuff in. A ramekin. Yeah. It always made me feel like there were small elves in my kitchen helping me cook and with my mise en place.
Mine used to be dirigible, but I'm not sure that I am tied to that word anymore.
It's a good word.
It is a good word. Defenestration is also fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the word, not the act.
Correct.
Okay, just making sure. Because you got a lot of windows in your place.
That's true. Most of them, well, I guess probably half of them.
You'd die if you fell out of a lot of our windows, I think.
You'd
but not all of them.
You'd at least break a leg.
Yeah.
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 Or an ankle.
Yeah.
Derek, what about you? What's your favorite word?
Nictitating.
Ooh, like the eye membranes?
The eye membrane, like alligators and such.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Just like saying it.
Sounds a little dirty.
Eric, your favorite word?
I got to remember to not ask questions that I can't answer myself.
Congratulations, you played yourself.
My favorite word is Elizabeth. So I guess I'll keep thinking about this, and when I think of my favorite word, I will shout it out in the middle of whatever else is going on. But Sam, yours reminded me of a food word that I quite like, which is rambutan.
Ooh.
Black Betty. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just fun to say. I have a soft spot for the longest word I've ever made in Spelling Bee, the New York Times Spelling Bee.
Ooh.
Yeah. I got 13 letters once. Dilly dallying.
Ooh,
it's pretty good.
It's a good word.
Impressive.
Mm-hmm.
It's impressive.
Thank you. I'm very impressive. All right, let's get to the real questions, shall we?
All right. Many of these came from our Spotify. Many of them came from our Patreon. Some of them were just emailed to us or just asked to us directly by friends. We will start with one from Peggy Pegs. Peggy Pegs asks, If you could perform at Eurovision, regardless of your current talent levels, thank you for adding that, Peggy Pegs, or else I'd be just relegated to San Marino. What country would you like to represent, and what type of performance, like song genre, presentation, etc., would you bring? I don't feel like I'm cool enough for Australian prog rock. Like, I just want to hang out with the guys and gal of Voyager. So I would want to just, you know, shimmy up to the band and just hang out with them for a while. Other than that, like, the thing is, like, if I had to go back to personal heritage, for countries that are participating currently at Eurovision, I'd basically be stuck with Lithuania or Ukraine, because that's just where I draw heritage from. Maybe Poland.
It's a good track record for qualification, though.
I know, right? I'll take it.
Yeah, I'd pick Lithuania, and you're through. Like, you don't have to worry about the song.
All right, all right, so I'd be Lithuanian prog rock. There we go.
Tavo, 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 Tavo,
Tavo,
Tavo, Tavo.
All right, I've got two answers for this.
What?
Nope.
Yes. Yep.
Denied.
You can have mine.
One of these is more realistic than the other. I think for grins and giggles, I would represent the Vatican with a Christian piece of some variety, mainly just because that's the most realistic possibility. I am a church vocalist, so
you just want to be like backed up by a whole bunch of hunky Swiss guards, don't you?
I wouldn't argue with that.
Hey.
Yeah. So that I think that's option A. Were the national broadcaster of the Vatican not willing to send such an illustrious act? Maybe Ireland, a place I have lived at least temporarily, with something Evanescence-esque, rock with female-led vocals. Sure. That's it. Those are my answers.
And the thing is, you can actually really sing. Like,
it's true.
I've heard you. Like, you could do
She's
it.
She's really good.
She's really, really good.
Depends on the day, but yes.
I'm a little concerned about the female-led rock, though. I mean, I don't think we have any examples of that doing well at Eurovision.
I mean, Romania.
Let me know what you want to do to Derek right now.
Right.
Choke him.
I've said this before, but her new single, Heat, absolutely
pretty
rips.
Good.
Oh, it's... Alexander Papadonescu is not mine. Liz's.
Have you not heard Liz's new single? What have you been? If we're going like the ethnic route, I would, my first option, I suppose, would be Norway. But I would have at least a non-zero claim to Sweden, the UK, and Ireland as well. I play acoustic guitar. How well I play depends on who you ask. If you ask me, I'd say I'm pretty good. If you ask anyone else, they'd say, and how am I at guitar?
Exceptionally good.
Yeah. It would be an acoustic rock, like an Ed Sheeran sort of thing, probably. Like, if I wanted to actually do well and not do something weird, if I want to do something weird, I'd just go for San Marino, because they'll take anything.
Derek, what about you?
My first instinct was to say Norway, just because of family heritage. But I think for the kind of music I'd want to do, the best country that would fit that would be Belgium.
Oh, we hate them, though.
I don't know. And I'd want to send something kind of artsy, dance, but weird and off-putting and experimental, like Belgium does.
Would you just make yourself the singer of Hooverphonic?
No, it has to be a female vocalist.
Be the change, Derek. Be the change.
I suppose.
Dream big.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you, Peggy Pegs. That was fun.
Yeah. Thank you, Miss Pegs.
All right. Next question up is from Shoegazer, I believe also coming in from Patreon. What is your favorite song from the Netherlands during their legendary and iconic 8-year-long non-qualifying streak? Just as a little bit of a Eurovision history refresher. So Shoegazer is talking about the sad period, at least for the Netherlands, between 2005 and 2012, where try as they might, they failed to qualify out of the semifinal. The best that they ever did out of that group was a 13th place in 2008. But let me do a quick run through of all these songs. So Glennis Grace, My Impossible Dream, Trebles Amambanda, Edcilia Rombly's On Top of the World, Hins, Your Heart Belongs to Me, Shine by the Toppers, Ich Bin Verliebt Shalali from Seneca, Never Alone by the 3Js, and Joan Franca's You and Me all failed to make it to the Saturday night. And so Shoegazer wanted to know, out of all of those songs, the highs, the lows, the in-betweens, what's our favorite out of that group? For me, I you know what? I do have a soft spot for You and Me by Joan Franca. However, when it came to a song that I was surprised didn't make it through just because of what was popular at Eurovision at the time, Your Heart Belongs to Me by Hind in 2008, I thought was going to go through. It would have been a fun one, but no, I'm probably going to mention that one.
I don't know. You know what? I will check these out and I will...
We'll report back. I'm kind of in the same boat here. This comes from before my Eurovision time, and I don't know that I saw a ton of these. We watched a significant amount of the nonstop hits on the YouTube stream, both before and after the contest this year and last year. I don't remember seeing any of these. So either they're just not hits in the category of nonstop hits.
Well, there are plenty of non-hits in that stream.
I mean, I agree, but... I need to do some research on this myself as well.
I will say, like, Edcilia Rombly, you know, On Top of the World wasn't as good as her song in 1998, Himmel in Arda, which is a shame because Edcilia is great. Himmel in Arda, incredible song.
Edcilia was she hosted in 2021, right? She was one of the hosts?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. I know that name, so she's got a good head start.
Edcilia is great. She was one of the co-hosts in Rotterdam. But yeah, Himmel in Arda is a legendary track from the late 90s. So even if On Top of the World wasn't great, she is. Derek, I think I know the answer for this one for you, because we've talked about it before.
It's Joan Franca.
I know you always had a soft and squishy spot in your heart for this one.
I don't know why. I understand the staging and the costuming is a little problematic. I get where she's coming from on that, but no, don't do that, please.
Can you elaborate on that?
She was doing this Cowboys and Indians sort of theme that children play, because it's a song about children, sort of. And she comes out wearing a full feather headdress.
Oh, no.
That's it. There is no other staging or other performers on
clothes?
Stage. It's no, she's got clothes, but
okay,
it's.
This reminds I just pulled it up on YouTube on silent here. This reminds me of like Cher, Gypsies, Tramps,
yes.
And Thieves.
Yeah.
As long as we're talking about things that you can't do anymore.
Yeah. It was coming from an innocent and sweet place. However, when it was brought up that, hey, this could be considered rather offensive because you are not a member of any heritage that this headdress would be a part
I can
of.
Do that.
And They kind of doubled down.
Anyway, long and the short of it, very problematic staging, but the song has like this very folksy country kind of feel to it. It's very nostalgic, and there's something very wistful about it. Just kind of thinking back on childhood and, you know, friendships or crushes or what have you. And I don't know, I just thought it's all very cute. It affected me more than I thought it would have for a song like that. I have listened to the other songs, and honestly, I'm like, I can't. I'd be struggled to think of another one that other than that.
It's like I do have some positive memories of 3As Never Alone. Just because it was, you know, the Dutch act in my first year on site. And I thought it was quite nice, but it ended up coming, I believe, in dead last that year.
Oh,
it did come in dead last. Yes, that's right. But it was very sort of easy listening and inoffensive, as a lot of the songs from that period were from the Netherlands. Didn't really shake anything up. It was all very middle of the road.
Well, to think that the Netherlands struggled for so long, and now, at least up until recently, they were kind of a powerhouse country.
I mean, when Anouk represented them in 2013, they basically just had this streak of sending really, really, really big names locally, and it just kind of crossed and cut through the noise and worked really, really well. So, because you had this Anouk and the Common Linnets back to back, and you're like, yeah.
Yeah, they're the country that sent country.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, French always
has a while.
Yeah, Dawa Bob. Yeah, same deal.
Mm-hmm. Outlaw in E minor, everyone's favorite.
Oh, dear. Anyway, Liz and Eric, did you have a chance to kind of run through some of these songs to see if there was any that stood out for you? Or
no, ma'am.
That's all right. That's all right. We can keep this rolling. We got a lot of questions. And
that's right.
Yeah. All right. So next up, a question from James McN, asking if you could get rid of one rule from the 2027 contest, what would it be?
Oh, we've discussed this before.
I would still continue to tinker with the voting system. For me, it would be continued modification and improvement of the voting system. You know, all the talk about, we encourage people to spread their votes around. Freaking do it. Like, actually make sure that is a thing that is done.
Yeah.
If
that's what you want, make them do it.
Yeah. Like, you have to vote for at least three songs, or, you can only give up to 50% of your votes to a single country or something like that. Just tinker. Don't just ask people to be nice, because people won't always be nice. So stop expecting people to be nice when they're not going to be nice.
What would I change? I would love for the instruments must be pre-recorded rule to be optional. I'd like to see more I want to see a real guitar solo or drum solo or whatever. I understand it could be a logistical nightmare, but I also understand that they spend months and months working up to figuring these things out, and I think that it could be made to work. And I think it would be cool if they did. Other than that, oh no, I have two answers. I'm a hypocrite. Oh crap, I forgot what the other one was.
They can remind you. Because I think the last time this question came up, I think it might have been our 200th episode, but what was a rule change we wanted? And I think both of us agreed, 3.5 minutes per song.
Ooh.
Just for 1 year? Yeah, that'd be cool. You're lengthening the show by at least 15 minutes.
But if we have fewer countries in the final...
Wouldn't necessarily be opposed to that either. Yeah,
I wouldn't be against that either.
Okay, if we're throwing logistics out the window, and why not? Because this is our own rule change.
Yeah,
animals on stage. I get you.
Close, but no. Well, in a manner of speaking, no cap to the number of performers on stage.
Oh.
Bring a choir.
I don't know. Bring a acrobat troupe. Bring a, I don't know what, but I don't care how many of them there are. Understandably, there would be some issues with miking a certain number of people, but if they're not all singing, what could we do performance wise and staging wise with more people? Would it be good? I don't know. Let's find out.
I'd be curious to see how much things changed if they'd stopped requiring vocals at all. I think most countries would still have them. Others might experiment with doing a really cool instrumental piece. I mean, Nocturne is... That's an instrumental song. Basically.
Vocals added as an afterthought.
And it won. So are we afraid of songs without vocals? Is that the problem? Probably not. I think that you should be allowed as a competitor to fight another competitor to the death.
Why?
Just gonna be silly. I'm going to say performance enhancing drugs are allowed.
Performance enhancing or just performance modifying? Because there's a very big difference between an act on steroids and an act on LSD.
Oh, an act on LSD would be wild.
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, Doc Ellis threw a no-hitter on LSD. Do you think anyone's ever won or done or performed in Eurovision while on something like that?
While on an illicit substance?
Yeah. Obviously, there's...
I'd say performed is almost a certainty.
Yeah.
One?
Maybe Måneskin?
No, that's been disproven.
I know.
Bullshit. We're not gonna play with that old trope.
I'm not saying Måneskin did, but it would not surprise me if there have been multiple artists who were on cocaine at the time of their performance.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Or just flat out drunk. I mean,
James Newman waited until afterwards to get wasted.
Well, wouldn't you after?
Yeah, I think we're not sure when he got started.
Immediately upon the removal of the dudes from the stage.
Yeah.
He might have shotgunned a beer while waiting by this backstage to go on.
That's like, this isn't going to hit for another 20 minutes. It's fine.
That's what was in the dudes. Just go to the mouthpiece and just chug.
Yeah, all right.
Nice.
It's the best staging anyone's ever come up with.
Nice. Shall we move on to the next one then?
Yes, let's.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Total change of tactics. Because, when we ask for these questions, it doesn't have to be Eurovision based. an anonymous patron asks, have you looked into Taskmaster Australia and New Zealand? And if so, do you have any favorite seasons? I certainly do.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Absolutely. New Zealand, season 2. David Koreas, you gorgeous little chaos goblin. I love you to pieces.
David Koreas and Guy Montgomery in the same season. Those two were monsters.
Brilliant.
And I'm going to throw this out there. If you haven't watched it, Guy Montgomery's Spelling Bee.
I'm on Spelling Bee, yes.
So good.
And now with Sam Campbell as the assistant on that one.
Oh, yeah. If you can find the original, they did 2 seasons in New Zealand before they moved to Australia. In the second season, they have to do like a charades thing. And it goes so spectacularly bad. It was like the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
I need to find more. I mean, where we are, I can only find like little clips on YouTube, but it is so good. Both Taskmaster and Guy Mount Spelling Bee.
Here's my question for both of you, I guess. If you had to pick one country of Taskmaster, like one particular run of Taskmaster to watch, would you pick the OG or would you pick something like New Zealand or somewhere else?
I mean, I feel like there are individual casts that kind of rise above others rather than the entire show itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love New Zealand season 2, but the series with Sarah Millican and Dara O'Brien and Fern Brady in the UK is absolutely brilliant. And you guys on the show know that whenever I get stressed out, whenever I have a really rough day, I have my go-to comfort listen, and it is from Taskmaster, the episode where the comedians have to pick 5 random words that they have to lace into the lyrics of a classical music song. Sarah Millican's Crumbs in My Bralette song is like an audio hug to me.
That's only 4 words.
I don't know, because it was greenery, bralette, toadstool, catnip.
She used crumbs, I think. Like pick the words. That would
no, she easy. No, she did pick the words. You pick the oh, words before you realize what the challenge is going to be, and then you have to take those 5 words and then lace them into the lyrics of, in her case, Claire de Lune.
Fantastic.
She was so embarrassed too.
But the way that everybody was so supportive of her.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was very adorable.
It was so wonderful. And so whenever I get stressed or overwhelmed or ticked off, I mean, Eric and Liz, you can vouch for this.
I can.
When we were stressed in Malmö,
yep,
we had 2 songs that we would put on. It was the Crumbs in My Bralette song and Jenny Stardust, My Arms Are Just Stuck Like This.
Yep.
Yep.
We had a dance party to that song.
We did.
Oh, yeah. There is some really good stuff in Malmö, to be fair. Like the bad stuff was almost unbearable, but man, we did have some fun out there.
That's trauma bonding for you.
And Liz and I went to like Tivoli Gardens and my ancestral home in rural Sweden before we even got to the contest. That was a good trip. That was a really good trip. Yeah. I have a question. What? Mm-hmm. Why hasn't David Mitchell done Taskmaster yet?
He probably saw what his wife went through and was like, nope.
Well, they finally, the new season is going to have Richard Ayoade, which they've been trying to get him for years.
Yeah. I was equally excited for that as I was unexcited for seeing
Nat Lucas.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wins.
Nina Conte's on there too, though, and she's fantastic.
Yeah, it'll be fine. He's gonna be, he'll be good. I had forgotten that Victoria has done Taskmaster. I gotta watch more Taskmaster. Too. All right.
One of the best shows on TV in any country. Absolutely. I love it. Anyway, let's see. Derek P. Different from our, our own podcast, Derek S.
You spelled it right. Thanks you.
Here you go. And actually, the question is sort of for you and me, Derek, Derek. Could you describe more what it's like to be part of a delegation? Like, what did you actually do? Was it a job that started months before, or did it start when you arrived in the host city? So for full knowledge here, Derek and I both served on the Bulgarian delegation in 2017, which was Chris Kostov's year. And then in 2018, I continued with the Bulgarian delegation, and then Derek was doing some work with the Austrian delegation. Both in different things.
Derek's 2 for 2 in podiums.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, he got a better streak than I do. So my role in both of those years was assistant head of press. So my work I was pretty hands-off prior to the contest itself. I helped out a little bit when it came to song selection and refinement, making sure that the title worked out, making sure that any press releases that went out seemed to have, you know, good flow of English, things like that. But my real work started when I actually got to Kyiv and to Lisbon. And my primary job was basically as the liaison between the delegation and our artists and the international press that wanted to interview them, making sure that people were contacted correctly, that people who wanted an interview got their interview, that there was an organization and a bit of a line to making sure that people had their time with our artists, and just making sure that people's heads were on straight, that there was some sense of organization. You know, as a non-Bulgarian speaking member of the team, I wasn't often the first point of reference for a lot of the inner workings. My role was a lot more sort of outward facing, you know, contacting the especially the English language media that wanted to work with our artist. And again, this is almost 10 years ago at this point, so my memories are a little bit fuzzy. It was a lot of fun. And especially working with Chris and the team that year was really, really exciting. Cause there was, you know, also the sort of duty of care of, you know, I was working with an artist who was 17 years old at the time, making sure that he was well taken care of. And, luckily his mom and his aunt were right there with us, but, you know, keeping an eye out for him, making sure that he was constantly getting as much water as he needed and people were just taking care of him. And so, yeah, that was, you know, it was a great, great group of people, and a wonderful team. I was really, really proud of the work that we did for those 2 years. But I'm happy to be back in the press room. Honestly, I kind of like my independence and my freedom and being able to work my own hours the way I see fit. Derek, what was your experience like? Cause you've worked with two different delegations, even though there was a lot of commonality.
Overlap.
Like, yeah. I mean, Cesar Sampson was the backing singer behind Chris, and then he was the lead singer the following year. So like you saw him from both sides, and your work was more photography based, yeah, and more visual, yeah.
Yeah, I was supposed to do photography and social media, some social media stuff for them. I would say, from my experience, we didn't do anything prior to getting to Kyiv, and then once we got there, there were days when we didn't have a whole lot going on, and then other days we were like working for like 15 hours straight.
Yeah.
Like the days we had rehearsals, we had to get there like first thing in the morning, even though we weren't rehearsing right away. And we had to get like costume, makeup. There was like meetings and discussion, and then actually doing the rehearsal.
And then the viewing rehearsal, room. After.
And then doing the viewing room. And then after that, doing press conferences. And after that, going and doing interviews. And I think I remember we didn't get back to our room until like 2 or 3 in the morning.
Yeah, because he had to make an appearance at Euro Club, so we're kind of doing a little bit of hand-holding with that.
So that was just like the first day of rehearsals, too. And by the end of it, I mean, every one of us was exhausted.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like that every day, but like the days where we had rehearsals and stuff, it was like, you got to be there at like 7 a.m. and you're not going to leave until like 2. Like, it's a full day.
Yeah.
And you're constantly running around and doing stuff. Like, there's always something to do. It's fun, though. I'm not going to lie. I had a great time doing it. Would I want to do it again? I'm not sure, because there were days, and at the end of it, I'm just like, I just want to go home.
it's exhausting. It was really, really rather exhausting. But
if I may, so rudely interrupt, Chris was. I'm just trying to remember. Chris was semi-2, right? Or was he semi-1?
I can't even remember. I think he was. I can't even remember. It's been a long time.
One, because I think we talked about how he'd have a day to rest afterwards.
Yeah, because then we went to Chernobyl and we had their free time. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of my question: is like, if you're an act in semi-1, and you qualify, what happens after that? Because you have 2 days where you're not involved at all.
I mean, for us, I know that there were they offered excursions that were optional. I know that. You know, the delegation and some of the artists, you know, we did city tours, we did, you know, and things like that. You know, Derek and I had some time to ourselves. So we went out to Chernobyl for a day trip. I know that in Lisbon, there were, you know, day tours that delegations could sign up for. There was, we did this river cruise. We went out to Sintra, for a day, which is, you know, a nice little day trip toward one of the manors over there. Went to a vineyard. I know that the Bulgarian delegation was there. I want to say the Armenians were there as well.
Oh, yeah, they were.
Yeah.
Because they were following the election that was happening.
Oh, that's right. So oftentimes there would be a social program, but then there would be, I know that some of the folks from Equinox joined us for these tours, and then others just wanted to kind of lay back and just recharge and chill. And that was up to them.
It varies a lot depending on the delegation, how much they get involved in and how much they want to do. I know when I was with the Austrian delegation, they didn't really do much outside of rehearsals and that. Like, they just kind of chilled and did their own thing. Ended up hanging out with the Bulgarian delegation some in Lisbon because they were out like doing all the tours and all the events and stuff. And I knew them, so I could tag along. But yeah, the Austrians just kind of weren't really into that, which is fine. But it's I would say basically, yeah, there's a lot of fun in it, but it's also a lot of work because it's months of preparation for what could only be a week and a half up to 2 weeks, depending on how well you do. Mm-hmm. And even if you do qualify, it's like, okay, got to get ready and do it all again tomorrow.
Exactly. It's and no two delegations are the same. No 2 years are the same. It really does vary. I mean, honestly, if you asked the people who had our role in the Bulgarian and Austrian delegations this year what their experience is like, it might be completely different from what we had. Also considering the fact that when we were there the first time, it was the full 2 weeks. The press would have access to these acts for 2 full weeks and see all the rehearsals instead of just, you know, the second week. And that really does change the dynamic. So, yeah.
Yeah. I need to ombuds again. I double check. Chris was second semi, but Equinox and Caesar were both first the year after.
That's right.
You got a taste of both semis. Mm-hmm. Look at you guys.
All arounders, that's us.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Next question comes up from friend of ours, friend of the show, Katie Proctor.
What's up,
Liz,
Katie?
Liz, fellow Wodge.
Hey, yes, I recognize that name.
Yes. Part of our semi-sorority that we are in. Anyway, she just wants to know, how does everybody take their coffee and what's their go-to bar order?
Well, Katie Proctor, I hate to disappoint, at least in part, but I am a decaffeinated person and I don't drink coffee. However, I will drink, and while I know it does contain minimal amounts of caffeine, any amount of dark hot chocolate that I am provided, if at a coffee shop that has such a substance. Bar order? Here's a little rant from me, which is...
How dare you?
No, there need to be more savory alcoholic beverages than just a Bloody Mary.
Which is just alcoholic tomato soup.
And to be clear, I like Bloody Marys, but sometimes you want something else that's not that, and not a beer, and not something that is, you know, Malibu and pineapple flavored sweetness. Because that tastes like college and regret. At a bar, I'm probably having a wine or maybe an old-fashioned or something along those lines.
Yeah, I'm also an old-fashioned fan. I love a Boulevardier or a paper plane, which, interestingly enough, was invented by a bartender named Sam Ross, which I find hilarious.
What?
It's also just a great freaking cocktail. But I'm a single malt scotch kind of girl, so give me the smoke, give me the peat. As for my coffee order, if I'm making something at home, I'll normally just do a cup of regular coffee with a bit of oat milk and a squeeze of sweetened condensed milk.
Ooh.
And a little dash of vanilla sugar that I get from Penzies, if you know Penzies in the U.S., highly recommend them, not only for their great spices, but also, frankly, for their politics. And if I'm out and about... vanilla latte is generally my go-to.
Gentlemen?
I don't really drink alcohol, so I'm the guy who gets an iced tea at the bar. For coffee, though, I get a salt caramel latte.
Ooh.
It's my go-to.
I also don't drink coffee. For all of the weird cooking appliances and Le Creusets and all the other crap that we have in this house, we do not have a coffee maker.
We do have a very fancy kettle, though.
Yes, for tea.
That can heat to various temperatures and...
That's true.
Yes.
See, Americans do have kettles. Yeah, for our British listeners.
I'll take a good Frappuccino, blended or bottled, just about any time. I do enjoy that sort of thing. For alcohol, I am not doing a lot right now because of my health, but if I did... First off, I think it depends on where I am. If I'm in Ireland, it's a Guinness. That's easy. It really is better there, and it's amazing, and I miss Ireland very much. Mm-hmm. If I'm anywhere else in the world, it depends. I'm a gin guy. It depends on what they have available. So, like, if there's just a really good gin, like the monkey something we were just
like
talking,
37 monkeys or something.
There's Monkey Shoulder. Oh no, that's a whiskey. That's blended whiskey.
Yeah, well, Liz looks that up. There was Monkey 37 or 12 Monkeys starring Edward Norton or whatever movie podcast. That this is marketed
Monkey
as being
47.
Monkey 47, directed by Bong Joon-ho. It's marketed at least as being hard to find. We found some at the Malta Airport, but it's a really nice, like, not necessarily top shelf, but really good gin. I'll just do a gin and tonic. And we'll generally very much enjoy it. If I'm not super concerned about that, or I'm feeling kind of fancy / drunk, I might go for like a French 75 or an Aviation or a Tom Collins, something like that. A well done gin cocktail is something I rarely pass up, generally speaking.
Yeah. If I'm traveling.
Gin... Oh, sorry. Really quick. Have you ever gotten gin in the Netherlands?
Has he ever?
Oh, man. Okay. My favorite gin in the world is Sylvius, which is Dutch. Okay. I've Bobby's is really good. That's also Dutch. I'd have to double check some of the others. As far as American ones go, Aviation, the one owned by Ryan Reynolds, is surprisingly great. There's one from Chicago called Few that I really like. Grim Farms here in Minnesota makes a very good premium gin as well.
Huh.
So, hooray. Like,
wherever I am, if there's a place like that has a liqueur or a beverage that is of that place, like, I'm going to try it. Like, I normally don't like gin, but if I'm somewhere, I'm going to try the local thing. Like the in Malta, there's a prickly pear liqueur. Yeah, Bajra, which is amazing.
That stuff is so good.
It's so good.
And like, it's not anywhere else.
We're in Bulgaria. Like, I'm going to be having like the local wine or like the rakia or anything like that. And I will always be, you know, chasing the memory of, you know, the house cocktail or the special cocktail at whatever bar I'm at. And like, there's this one. Okay. So best cocktail I've ever had. It's similar to the Boulevardier that I mentioned earlier. I got it at the Horseshoe Bar at the Shelbourne Hotel in Dublin, which is fancy bar, fancy hotel. Like, I think they wrote the Constitution of Ireland in that hotel somewhere. And the Horseshoe Bar is this sort of dark, intimate cocktail, whiskey forward. It's the place that the Stones would hang out at when they were like in Dublin. Like, it's just cool. It just exudes awesome through the walls. And they have this one cocktail called El Greco Madness that was Irish whiskey, Aperol, vermouth that was steeped with cacao, orange bitters, served up, I want to say, with nutmeg sprinkled on top. And it was so damn good. And I got it on the first day, for the first night of the trip that my now husband and I took, the trip that he proposed to me on. So I will always be chasing the perfection of the Shelbourne Hotel's Horseshoe Bar El Greco Madness. Right. So good. If you find yourself in Dublin.
I wish I would find myself in Dublin.
Yeah.
Well, now you have an assignment.
Make that happen for us.
You have an assignment.
That would be great. Also, the Bailey's Bar in Liverpool in the Press Center. You could just go drink for free.
I can't believe I missed out on that by a year.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry about that. Liverpool really was the best year.
Yeah. From what I can remember of it, yes.
Yeah.
Ooh. Anyway, all right. So we've got back to Eurovision questions.
We really went on a tear on that one.
Yeah. You know, I love these questions.
That's my favorite podcast. One so far. I ask me about breakfast cereal, just something.
I mean, like, people who know me and know my love of trivia, like, my things are geography and, like, food and beverage. Like, those are my specialty subjects. So you ask me about specialty cocktails and places I've been. Like, I am all over that. Anyway, back to Eurovision. We've got a listener named Nathan who asked us through Patreon, actually, a couple of questions. Your favorite Eurovision song pre-2000 can't be a winner.
Ooh.
That is really hard because you will have to ask like 100 times. You'll get 100 different answers. Yeah, so I'm going to have to go with Iceland 1997, Min Hinsti Dans by Paul Oskar. Song is an absolute icon in staging and personality and just freaking song. It was incredibly sexy. And if it had been performed in 1998 instead of 1997, it probably could have won the whole thing. But it was the year before a lot of countries started to bring on actual public voting. So I think it lost out on a lot of public sentiment. But for asking me right now, that might be my favorite Eurovision song pre-2000 that wasn't a winner. I know I'm the encyclopedia here, but
yeah, I'm gonna be honest, I can't think of anything.
I've got one. And this is maybe on kitchen earworm value alone. But I'm going with Genghis Khan.
Oh yeah,
classic.
It's by today's standards, it's not actually probably very good. But it's from what am I like? The first time I watched it, I was like, what am I watching? I'm not getting those 3 minutes back of my life. And yet, it is one of those songs that you will find yourself just like hoo-haing and like it's one of those earworms that just gets stuck in your head, and I don't mind it, and I like it. So, Genghis Khan.
I can think of a few that feel... It feels like a cop-out to say Volare. It also feels a bit like a cop-out to say, like, Ooh Ah, just a little bit, because I do like that song. Poupée de Cire, Poupée de Son won, didn't it?
Yes,
so
it
I
did.
Can't, okay, so I can't pick that. I keep running into, like, oh, yeah, like, Nocturne, that's from pre-2000, but that won.
But if you like that, you might like another Serge Gainsbourg song from around that era, a song called Boom Bada Boom, which was all about nuclear war. But it was yes.
It was the 99 lift balloons of its day.
Basically, yeah. I want to say it was from Monaco. The singer's name was Manouche Borelli.
The Manouche.
Yeah, so if you like Poupée de Cire, Poupée de Son, want that similar vibe in terms of that sort of Gainsbourg sure. yeah kind of thing. Check out Boom Bada Boom by Manouche Borelli.
I think my actual answer to the question is Freddie and Friends, Pump Pump.
Pump Pump.
Yeah. That's the way we dance till we die.
That's right.
Ay-ay-ay.
Good question.
Fun question. Okay, so what is the most undeserved nilpois and the most deserved nilpois?
Ooh.
I need like the full list here.
Undeserved,
yeah,
the Make Makes.
I gotta pull up the list.
I Am Yours by the Make Makes, easy.
Oh, yeah.
Is the most undeserved for me.
Are we saying zero overall or zero in one or the other?
I say either, but qualify it. You know, let it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it can be in just one of the votes, I would say Birth of a New Age.
I was about to say Junker McCroy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I really liked Solove by Goé, and that didn't get any points. It's ridiculous.
I think I've mentioned this before in a previous thing where we were talking about nilpois. Going back to 87, Turkey's entry that year, Şarkı Sevgi Üstüne by Seyel Taner and Lokomotiv. Insane choreography and just pure joy. The other songs that you guys have mentioned are incredible in their own way, but when it comes to sheer, just unadulterated, this makes me happy, Şarkı Sevgi Üstüne. The title literally means this song is about love. How can you not like this?
I'll throw Look Mom No Computer out there too.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I mean, I'm thinking about Gendrick too.
I like that
song.
I just feel sorry.
If we're talking about deserving songs, I'm going to throw Embers in there. Just.
But he was drinking from the trumpets, as we've established.
I know, but.
For dessert ones, especially when it came to the live performance. I'm sorry, Crybaby. You got what you deserved on that one. I'm sorry, y'all.
Ugh. All right.
And then, let's see, I believe that, one second, my computer's lagging again. Okay, Nathan had one other question for us, and this was really must on, one Nathan. Just for me, that I recommend an obscure entry from each decade. So I kind of went through and just, things that are obscure to me might be obscure to, not obscure to somebody else, so I don't know. From the 50s, I picked the Danish entry from 1957. Basically, the title translates as the ship is leaving tonight. And it's awkward because it had this really extended, long kiss at the end of it that was scandalous at the time. But the song is actually very, very sweet about two lovers who are being parted because the ship is sailing away tonight. And they end with a kiss that went on too long because supposedly somebody missed a cue.
Oh, no.
Just yeah. Don't get on the ship. It's not difficult.
I know, right? For the 60s, I said Finland 1962, Tipiti by Marion Rung, just because it's freaking adorable. 1970s, I went with the Dutch entry from 1972, Alles om de Liefdegaat. Thank you. Again, just pure joy. And also the Portuguese entry from 1974, Depois do Deus, which frankly, if Frank Sinatra were Portuguese, he probably could have done that. And it was also the song that helped trigger the Carnation Revolution in Portugal. So some very cool history behind that one. For the 1980s, I picked Belgium 1980, Telex with Eurovision, a self-referential song that I normally hate, but it's actually Belgium. Amazing. I know.
Them.
And Portugal 1982 with the song Bang Bom, which is basically just a very happy clappy song about a one-night stand. It's also just really freaking catchy. 1990s, I already mentioned Minhinsi Dance, but I'm also going to mention Italy's song from 92, Rapsodia by Mia Martini. That rusted razor blade of a voice that was absolutely spectacular. France in 94, Nina Morado, Je suis un vrai garçon, which means I'm a real boy. But it was sort of moody and alt in a way that 90s era girl pop could be. And sort of tortured in a really cool artsy way. Let's see. For the 2000s, I'm going to say Estonia 2003 with the song 80s Coming Back by Rufus, which was this sort of very early 2000s Britpop kind of a sound.
Oh.
And it always made me happy. And if you're looking for ethnic, I'm going to say Albania 2006 with Jarev Tot by Luisa Gili. Again, ethno-bop. And from the 10s, I'm just going to pick songs that did not qualify that I always liked. Estonia, Malcolm Lincoln, Siren. Again, minimalist, very Estonian, completely underrated. I don't care if I'm the only one who likes it. Belarus 2012, I have a very soft spot in my heart for Light Sounds, We Are the Heroes. Again, if you have not listened to our in-depth interview that we did with Damon Karyakin of Light Sound that came out a couple of months ago, I highly recommend that you do. His story is absolutely incredible, and I'm really proud and honored to call him a friend. So yes, I'm biased and I don't care. Listen to We Are the Heroes, especially the original version of the song, the way the band intended it to be. And then finally, from 2013, the 1-2 punch that is Igranka and Identitet.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Again, two songs left on the cutting room floor.
What about the 2020s, Sam?
You know what? Frankly, if you've been listening to this show, you don't need me to tell you what's
here. Have you heard of this song called Jala?
I need more of it. Anyway, what's our next question? Somebody take it off my hands. I've been talking too much.
Okay. Let's see. All right. Graham, what's up, buddy? Hope you're enjoying that baby you have. He's very cute. But enough about Graham. What are your favorite Eurovision songs about or involving non-human animals?
Ooh. I mean, there's Alf Poyer from Austria 2003, and the Menschzelt, which is all about how rabbits have little noses and cats have little paws.
It's true.
Like a Party's not on this list.
Poor Laika. She deserved so much better, both than her actual fate and for that song eulogizing her. I'm sorry. You know what? Give that wolf a banana.
Honestly, yeah, that was the first one that came to mind to me. The second one that came to mind is Papa Penguin, which is not necessarily an endorsement. It's just one that came to mind. Also not an endorsement, but came to mind. Ivan, Help You Fly.
Oh, yes. The Naked
Werewolf. This doesn't really have anything to do with animals except for the whole weird wolf thing going on in the background and him wanting to be naked with a real wolf on stage.
Give the man an A for effort.
Let's also shout out Blackbird from Finland.
Yeah.
One of the best non-qualifiers ever.
Yeah.
Crazy that didn't get through.
Heartbreaking.
Shout out to Rim Tim Taggy Dim with a cat please meowing back.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a good way to involve animals.
Yes.
Since we spoke of it earlier, the song that broke the Netherlands losing streak was Birds.
Burbs.
Burbs.
Which is a great song.
Again, just minimalist, moody, intimate, beautiful song, beautiful staging.
Ah. No one's picked Dustin the Turkey.
Nope.
Or Pete.
And moving
Tex.
On.
Or Achille Lauro's bull, mechanical bull.
It's a mechanical bull, an animal?
It is a non-human.
I mean, it's a non-human. It qualifies there for sure.
It's a non-animal animal.
Man, I wonder where that thing is now. If anybody knows what happened.
I was going to say, Philip Kirkhoff probably found a way to have it installed in his house.
Yeah.
I mean, Achille Lauro might have had it installed in his house. Like
the ultimate piece of Eurovision memorabilia.
Does the common linnets count because they're named for a bird?
Oh, I'll allow it. Involving non-human animals, yeah.
That's a good one, too.
All right, we have our last question up here. And it goes to...
Oh, it's this freaking guy.
Yeah. Him again. Again, friend of the show. We've mentioned him before. James Stevenson, ESC Insight, and the maker of the model. What will it feel like if Canada wins Eurovision? And I think
inexpensive.
Yes, seriously.
Somehow right.
I'll allow it. I mean, we as Minnesotans have a closer, more understanding relationship with our Canadian neighbors than I think a lot of other people in this country do. I don't know how much of it is just wishful thinking of, you know, annexation, but I would be thrilled for our neighbors if they took it. We know how awesome Canada is, both artistically, politically. Like they're our sensible neighbors to the north. It's maybe what, a 3-hour drive up to Thunder Bay, 4 hours from here?
Closer to, if I had to guess.
Okay. But I mean, I know that selfishly, like we can fly to a whole bunch of Canadian destinations direct from Minneapolis, and make it to a whole bunch of others with a connection. So I would love for my European friends to understand the joy of watching a Eurovision event in early afternoon. So you have the contest and then you have the rest of your day to party, that you're not exhausted.
Yeah. That's always nice.
Yeah.
We'd have to get up earlier.
Worth it. What would you guys think if the neighbors took it?
I'll also just add, I would be so fascinated by the host city selection process for Canada, because for a lot of cities there are like one or two options for this sort of thing. Really, Canada would have a ton. Like you could just hold it in Toronto because it's the biggest city in terms of infrastructure and all of that. You could do Montreal to make it a little more ethnic. You could do Vancouver if you want to give a middle finger to everyone and make them go all the way across the country. Winnipeg has a huge arena. Calgary has multiple large arenas, like Ottawa. Like there are a lot. They would have a lot of options. And I would be really intrigued to see what that looked like, because it would be a very unique process compared to what we've seen the last few years.
Gander 2028.
Gander.
Maybe.
I mean, I've been to Newfoundland. St. John's is a lovely, lovely little city, and they've got an arena there.
Little, you say?
Bigger than Basel?
Hey.
All right.
Maybe. Well, I don't know. Sure. I'd have to look at the numbers. Anyway, we'll figure it out. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah.
Again, you at home listening to us, thank you so much for listening, for being with us, for supporting us, for sending questions. If you did, feel free to send more questions. Like we love these kinds of things. And again, this, the weirder and stupider and more tangential, the better. You know how to reach us. 12pointsUSA on basically any social media, 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. Find us on Patreon if you'd like to reach us that way. I mean, this has been an amazing 300 episodes. Can't wait for the next however many number we have. And I wouldn't have it with any other fabulous group of folks by my side other than you guys. And, you know, maybe Danny if we let him in. Or any other guests we invite, but...
That's right.
Yeah. Just thank you. Thank the three of you and thank everybody around the world listening for love, support, good vibes, and just being part of the family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We love you all.
Love you.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. But until the next time, everybody, I've been Samantha.
I've been Derek.
I've been Eric.
And I've been Liz.
And America.
Stop listening
now. Oh, God, don't kick Eric into the hole.